Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Well, hello there and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer and joined today by Paul Ghost. How are we, Paul?
All good, yeah. Yeah. Had a nice week off, didn't I, and then come back into it, into the thick of things, another win. It feels like we're getting towards the business end now, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, we are getting towards eight games to go in the Premier League. Obviously, could be potentially five in the Europa League. I'm listening to myself. so we are in the business end. I feel like I haven't podded with you for a little while.
No, I think the last one we did was, a few weeks back, wasn't it? We're still able to talk about Liverpool wins and nervy wins, tense wins, but wins nonetheless, back to the top of the league, and we move on. Yeah. We've got again.
Yeah. Theo, you've been in many a pod the last few weeks, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I didn't realise me and Ghosty were going to match today. It's not so
nice.
Well, to be fair, we've all sort of mishmashed it, because Ghosty and I went for the white t-shirt look, and you've gone for the nice maroon.
Yeah. The burgundy.
It's nice. Lovely. no small talk. I was told, I read some of the YouTube comments the other day, and someone was like, don't talk about yourselves, just talk about football. So
just do 40 minutes of about what have we got planned for the weekend?
More work. We are live on YouTube, so if you would like to make a comment, ask a question, have a shout out, this is a nice comment. Someone said, love the show. A highlight of my week is listening to you guys, which is very nice of you. Thank you for saying so. They also said they've slipped into the trap of worrying about goal difference for the league. Yeah, I have sleepless nights about goal difference, goals scored, crazy playoff games.
How often have titles been decided by goal difference?
Very, very rarely.
2012, was it? 11? Man City? Aguero? That was a goal difference league, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, but the way Liverpool and City have gone at it, I don't think I could take another final day 1 point shootout, really.
For mine now, I can't take another eight games, so we've had the last two.
True.
I do think that we're going to come into it, obviously, but I do think that's a general, or should be a concern for Liverpool. Yeah. You know, is they expending too much emotion and tension with this many games left to come? But anyway, I'm sure we'll get into it.
Yes, Michael Hilditch just said, after last night's match, I had to go for a walk. I've decided to go for a walk during the match on Sunday. My nerves can't take any more this weekend. Great result, but it's not doing my health much good. You and me both, Michael. Yeah, it's like that this stage of the season. We should be used to it, but we never fully get used to it. Keep your comments coming in. If you've got any questions, any shout-outs, pop them in there. I'll try and get round to them. We are brought to you by NordVPN, which comes in handy. It's come in handy for both of you on your travels recently. And certainly if you want to watch that, Alexis McAllister goal on repeat. And depending where
you're doing this one, Klopp's favourite.
Klopp's favourite, yeah. Watch Klopp's favourite on repeat. I mean, wherever you are in the world, you can use NordVPN to make sure you can watch it. And we will talk at length about Alexis McAllister very shortly. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating. Give us 5 stars if you fancy it. Leave a nice comment. I always read them. It's always great to see. So thank you very much if you've done that.
You're not just saying that either. You do read them.
I message you, don't
you? Pass them on, yeah. It's nice to hear.
Do you come out of the meeting and go, oh, I need cheering up after that? I'll go and read the comments.
Yeah, I mean, they don't always cheer you up. You do see the odd nasty one. If you feel nasty, I mean, you can leave your comments free will, but maybe just don't. You know, like, I don't know.
There's plenty of that to go around on Twitter, isn't there? Or X.
Exactly. But if you want to leave a nice one, I do read them, and it does cheer me up. There's not enough niceness in the world, I think, sometimes. Let's crack on. Let's crack on with Alexis McAllister. Let's start there because just an absolute wonderful strike to get Liverpool back ahead last night, just when we thought it was going to become one of those games, didn't we? You know, Sheffield United got that equaliser. It came out of nowhere. It was scrappy. It was horrible. They were digging in. I don't know. I think I mentioned before the Sheffield United game. I always feel like they drag us down to their level, Sheffield United, and they seem to be very good at that against Liverpool, whereas other teams seem to put a fair few goals past them.
Yeah.
But it felt like they'd done that last night and just starting to worry. And then Alexis McAllister, like he so often has in recent weeks, just stepped up. And it was a bit of a Steven Gerrard-esque strike, wasn't it?
It was very Steven Gerrard-esque, wasn't it? Very reminiscent of that goal against Olympiacos, which is remarkably 20 years ago now. Cuts across it beautifully, doesn't he? Gerrard was on the half volley. He's a little bit further out in it and pings into the bottom corner more, but cuts across it brilliantly, doesn't he? And the keeper, Grbić, however you say his name, he didn't get anywhere near it. It was, you know what, it was one of those, not just was it reminiscent of Gerrard in the aesthetic of it, you know, the brilliant strike into the top corner. It was also a Gerrard moment of just dragging the team back into where they wanted to be after labouring against a team who had no real right to give Liverpool as good a game as they did. You know, they've been conceding goals left, right and centre, haven't they? Sheffield United, 77 before last night. The most ever in a 38-game season was 89, I think, Derby, 07-08. So they're gonna go past that because, you know, they're on to 80 now, aren't they? So the Liverpool, nowhere near good enough, certainly for the first half at least, getting to the edge of the box and didn't really know what to do with it and didn't have any major chances. And the goal he scored was comical. And then the longer it went on, you could see it happening, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Without sounding fatalistic or Ian Doyle style, you know, doom-mongering, you could sense them getting back into it. And all they needed was a little bit of an overload at the back post. Conor Bradley gets outnumbered, goes in off his leg and Max Kelleher, and all of a sudden you think, well, why are Liverpool making this so hard for themselves, like they tend to do in most weeks? And then McAllister with his Gerrard moment, and Liverpool never really looked back. But on McAllister himself, he's been absolutely sensational, hasn't he? You know, the going rate for the top midfielder now is apparently 100 million, you know, Enzo Fernandez, Moises Caicedo, Declan Rice, and McAllister for just 35 million, say that in inverted commas, he's been an absolute steal. And weirdly, it's not one of those where Liverpool have got him from, you know, a European league or from further down the Premier League, and he's turned into a world beater. You know, he was starring for Argentina in the World Cup and for a Brighton side who everyone knew about, everyone loved as their kind of second team, if you like, last season. And he was their star man, and he finished sixth, the highest ever finish ever for Brighton, certainly in the Premier League era. And Liverpool got him for a relative snip without any real competition, and he's been sensational certainly the last 2 or 3 months, and at just 24, 25 is he now, maybe his best years ahead of him.
Little Christmas, didn't it?
Sublime player, and just love watching him every week.
Yeah, I'm trying to desperately log into Twitter because I had some good stats and my computer's logged me out, but I mean, one of the things I loved about that goal is that I always think of big personalities and big personalities drag you to the biggest titles. You know, we've seen it many times over, and it did feel Steven Gerrard-esque the way he dragged Liverpool. And you felt, I think he's been a good buy, and I think you've seen his abilities all season, but you felt in the last, say, 2 months, McAllister just emerging as a real personality on the pitch for Liverpool and taking responsibility in big moments. And you know, it was just a wonderful strike, but it feels like he's really pushed himself to the fore of this team now. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, he's one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment. It's no coincidence this run into form has come for Liverpool with him in that further advanced position as a number eight. That's where all the goals and the assists are coming. And we've said before, he doesn't have pace, but he's got everything else. But he doesn't need the pace because he seems to slow the game down at the right time. And he's just always so calm and collected. Like, he's the one who picks that perfect pass to Salah at the weekend. He's the one who puts it to the far post for Nunes to head in at the last minute against Forest. He's just always stepping up at the right time. It was a bit nervy last night. Like, when he scored the absolute screamer against Fulham, we knew from the main stand, as soon as he hit it, that's in. We had the perfect angle. You see that go in the top corner. But when he hits it, apart from knowing how hard it's been hit, that could have gone anywhere, from our angle anyway, to the side. And then you see it nestle in the top corner, and the relief. I think I just went, oh my God, because you know it's a special strike from a special player. And as Gorsi said, 35 million, what the hell? How have they got him for that cheap? A World Cup winner as well. I remember writing a piece last season, because he started the season really well for Brighton, and it's like, hang on, his contract's up in the summer. He should be someone Liverpool looking at, because he had the right attributes for what their recruitment team look at in terms of winning the ball back, playing those passes. And it's when Liverpool's midfield completely broke down and you were looking for any sort of solution. I think as soon as I submitted that, they announced he signed a new contract. But then it obviously Liverpool...
With the release clause.
Yeah, with the release clause. So while that wasn't public knowledge at the time, Liverpool once again managed to get the contacts in order, found out about it, and brought him in for an absolute snip. And it's just strange, as Gorsi was saying there. He's not an unknown. He won the World Cup. He set up a goal in that final. Yeah. And I think before we may be a bit naive looking, oh, he's in that Argentina team and he's starting, but he wouldn't be if it was as good an Argentina team as it had been 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, where they had so many world-class players all over the pitch, whereas now it's just Messi and 10 others. But then maybe we've been a bit harsh on them. They won the World Cup. And then now you're seeing, well, McAllister's going to be this leading player for club and country for years to come. And he's just stepping up at the right moment. Like, we're almost at that stage of the season where you go, is he up for player of the year overall? Phil Foden probably edges it. But he's coming into form just at the right time as Liverpool going for the run in and have to try and drag it over the line.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Just one final point on McAllister. It's another.
We'll talk about him all day.
It's another triumph of Liverpool's recruitment team, and I've seen that. Don't know your followers, Ian Five Ankles breakfast show yesterday, which is like a parody thing of like Talk Sport, and it's quite funny. And they're talking about McAllister, and it's like, how did Liverpool find this player? They've unearthed them, they've planted them, and it's all like a little bit of a tongue in cheek thing. But it is a testament to how Liverpool have managed to get him without any huge competition through the contacts again, which is, it sounds like we say this a lot, but it is generally how it tends to work. You know, Liverpool worked with the agent on the Philip Coutinho deal to bring him in, was it 2013, was it? January 2013. And maintain that relationship to the point where I think it was him who was able to tell them, look, Alexis has signed a new contract, but he's got a release clause at X amount. Keep your eye on that. And so Liverpool did, and that's how they've managed to do that deal. So and it sometimes looks a bit strange that Liverpool haven't had Manchester City breathing down the necks for him, or, you know, Chelsea, for example. It all comes from, you know, behind the scenes, and Liverpool are some of the best at that, to be fair to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of exactly where I was going to take it. You know, all the talk was about Jude Bellingham last summer, and look, no one's going to argue how good a player Jude Bellingham is, and there's still a little I still get a little bit of regret thinking that if Liverpool maybe moved a couple of years earlier, he could be playing in this team now. But for all that, the work Liverpool did was incredible. Szoboszlai has been very good. Endo is the world's best player. But then McAllister, and these I finally found the stats. I mean, just looking at Brighton, it's just basic stuff, but most goals, most shots on target, most possession won in the final third, which I think is probably of all these stats, one of the most key here for Liverpool.
Yeah.
Most through balls, most fouls won. I mean, obviously his profile fitted Liverpool so well, but to do that for £35 million, I mean, it puts other teams to shame. You look around, you look at Man United, you look at Chelsea, you look even at you know, some of the title rivals. They're not doing business on that sort of level.
You look 10 years ago, £35 million was the record signing for Liverpool. It's like, yeah. Too much Randy Carroll there. And that is a bargain.
Oh, wait, but it certainly is.
I don't think you can get a top player now, or very rarely can you get a real top player for anything under £40 million.
Yeah. I mean, look at what Mason Mount cost. It's... You know, £35 million is a bit of a steal, really, nowadays. And it sounds a bit mad saying that, especially when, like you say, I remember when they signed Carroll for 35. But you know, you look at the midfielders they were linked with. You look at some of the business done by other teams, Caicedo, Fernandes, costing £200 million between them, and then Liverpool got him and Endo for basically £50 million between them.
Yeah.
So
it's basically the price of Fabinho and Henderson, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it's incredible business in 2023 as well. So just on Endo's strike. Yeah, not Endo, sorry. Endo on the brain. McAllister's strike. It just got me thinking. Favourite clean Liverpool strike? Take Gerrard, Olympiacos out of it.
Remember West Ham?
Yeah, Gerrard West Ham. Yeah, that's up there. Gerrard against Middlesbrough. The end, just towards the end.
Gerrard out of it.
Yeah, Jim Gerrard have his own competition. Daniel Agger, was it against Blackburn? He cuts across it, he carries it out of Blackburn or West Ham.
Recent Man United is the right answer, isn't it?
Barring in as well. It's always a little aesthetic when they just. Yeah, cushions and off the bar. Yeah,
I think we had a chat on a recent pod about our favourite type of goal, and for me, it's always if it's a volley that makes it even better. But a long range, just well struck strike is
kick it as hard as you can, break the net.
Yeah, I mean, just when it travels,
all like the passing moves in the world don't catch the eye, do they?
No, just love it. You know, people used to talk about that Jack Wilshere goal for Arsenal against Norwich. To tap in, you know, that what McAllister did last night, I loved it. I've got a lot of time.
I've not seen it for a while until this season, have we? Like, Liverpool don't tend to shoot from outside the box too often, and now they've got two of the best in the league in Szoboszlai and McAllister.
Yeah, Fabinho did one against City, didn't he? 3-1. That was a hell of a strike. Haman used to get a few really nice
Portsmouth
was volley, that was good.
But certainly. Gerrard against Everton, I know we said no Gerrard, but in the derby, the 3-1, where he's
Yeah.
I love a clean strike. Tell us your favourite clean, hard strike in the comments.
Recently United probably is the one.
Recently United is the pinnacle of all.
Picture it now. Yeah. I can hear Martin Tyler's commentary from that. Yeah.
It was just like so well struck.
I just remember friendly against Celtic as well, the release, the Kraken.
Do you think that last night, Theo, has the potential to be a bit of a... I saw Chris Bascombe put this in... I think it was Chris, in his match report last night. A Vincent Kompany moment, Liverpool?
I think a couple of them did. I think Lewis Steele did as well. It feels too early to make that claim yet. There's still, 8 weeks left to go. And while it could be decisive at the end of the season, there's still too much football left to be played. This weekend coming up feels huge because on paper, you think, all three sides who are leading the table should win, but they've all got the potential to be banana skins. Like, we know United will frustrate Liverpool. We know what they do, and they've got form for frustrating them in recent years. 7-0 aside. Then you've got, Palace, City. That's been a bogey team for them, and Brighton showed last week against Liverpool how tricky they can be as well. Like, if all three sides win, you just go again, but it has the potential for teams to drop points.
How many games before the end was Kompany left?
An ultimate.
Was it penultimate?
I'm pretty sure it's penultimate. Yeah. That's what makes this year's...
It was in May, wasn't it? It was the day before Barcelona 4-0.
That's what makes this running different, though, isn't it? Because we're all nervous with so many games to go because Liverpool are actually in the lead. It's actually in their hands. Mm-hmm. Like 2 years ago, they had to win at the Etihad to get in front, and they didn't. And you're just waiting for a slip-up that never comes.
Yeah.
In 2019, I think they were ahead of City, but City had that game in hand against Leicester to come. And we all know what happened there, as you just mentioned. But that's what makes this a bit different. If Liverpool don't blink, if they can hold the nerve, it's theirs.
So to play devil's advocate a bit, I worry or wonder whether Liverpool are expending too much emotion and energy, and it's all a bit fraught and it's all a bit too early for all of that. Something I asked Klopp on Wednesday, and something I managed to put to Van Dijk, and they dismissed it. You know, they were saying, well, no, they didn't really agree with it. But I just wonder, you know, Liverpool don't really have too many games to do it. It's comfortable and it's a bit of a stroll. And they've won 21 games now, so considering they win most weeks, every game seems to be fraught and frayed and nail-biting moments and worry and concern. And all that is great when you're winning, when you go and win, you know, with a last-minute winner like a Forest, or where they managed to squeeze through it against Brighton on Sunday, or even last night when you're 20 minutes from a bit of an embarrassing season.
Yeah.
Derailing results and you win, but we're still 8 games out and still some big fixtures to come. You know, Tottenham at home, Villa away, Everton away, United on Sunday.
Yeah,
these are some big games, and I just wonder if there's a lack of control which could undermine them at some stage.
They need to win a few more games comfortably, don't they?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
but then you say that, and I think you're right. But I look at like Brentford away was much more comfortable than I imagined it would be. Same goes for Bournemouth away. You know, I remember thinking that was very tricky. They lost their last season, but you are right. I think
part of that's going to be the defence. You don't have your first choice right back, your first choice goalkeeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can make claims that Gomez is potentially edging towards first choice left back, but historically it's Robertson, and then centre backs are chopping and changing every week.
That's true. 26 points though from losing positions says that it's not, you know, they've had to show character and resilience. And I can't remember the last time he played well in the first half. Seems to be
they always concede early, and they were lucky not to yesterday.
20 seconds in,
it just feels different to 19-20. Like then Liverpool felt like they're going to win every game, and they could be losing 1-0 in the last minute and they'd still find a way, and they did that a couple of times. Whereas now every time they're in that position, you think, is this the day it comes unstuck? You've still got the faith that they're going to find a way. Maybe part of that is because it is a new squad. Like you've still got Salah's, Van Dijk's, who have won everything, but the side that won the league, they'd done it in the Champions League. They had Barcelona, they had that experience.
There's relative inexperience in that side.
Like McAllister's won the World Cup, Szoboszlai's won a few trophies, Gravenberch has won a few trophies. There is still experience there elsewhere, but you've still got very young players, and then the likes of Bradley, Quanso, still early in their journey. Mm-hmm. And while that can be a positive in terms of no fear, it's also inexperience that can lead to mistakes or being a bit too raw, not knowing how to handle a game. Like we saw against Brighton, Liverpool should have just taken it to the corner in those last minutes and killed the game.
Yeah.
And they didn't. Hopefully Curtis Jones come back helps, because the substitutions last night were brilliant.
Yeah.
They really made a difference in getting hold of the ball, getting into the final third.
Robertson in particular. Yeah.
Robertson as well. So hopefully these experienced players coming back into it. And you think you got Jota a couple of weeks away, Trent, that makes the difference in this run. But as Gusty says, it's very early to be having this emotion every single game, those nerves come in.
And it's obviously heightened by the Klopp storyline as well.
Yeah.
Feels like everything's on a knife edge every week.
But you say that, but the flip side of that, I think, is that this is a Liverpool side that under Klopp has always fed off emotion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think without you take that away, they're not, you know, the cold-hearted Man City team that goes and takes teams apart. You know, I think actually Arsenal have tried to, you know, I go back to the game that they won 3-1 at the Emirates in January. Was it January or February? Early February. And the effort that they made, you know, there was a bit of criticism, myself included, of a little bit of fakeness, you know, the song that they played and all that. But I felt like that was an effort to create emotion, to create a narrative and an atmosphere and a culture that served Liverpool so well since Klopp came in.
They're trying to do the best of both worlds, aren't they, really? You know, City's control and then Liverpool's emotion. And, you know, good luck to them. Yeah. They're obviously a team on the rise. Yeah. We'll see how it pans out. But yeah, I mean, that's just a slight concern for me at the moment, that. But we'll see. But you are right in terms of Liverpool generally you know, being at the best when it is that emotional to feed enough.
They'd never have beaten Barcelona if it wasn't for the emotion of the occasion. Yeah. So, you know, I do think of the three teams in the title race, Liverpool are the ones that benefit most from emotion. And
maybe that's the concern, that more of the games are away from home in the running. Yeah. Like, you can't feed off it as much, and we know how tricky it's going to be going to United, going to Everton, Villa. I suppose that's at the mercy of if they're in the Conference League final, if they're still in contention for Champions League football or not, if they drop off. What else? You've got West Ham, then that'll go on European football as well. Fulham's always a very tricky place to go.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I do wonder, I mean, we're all similar ages, but I think there's an element of me having grown up and seeing Liverpool miss out on so many titles because they go away from home. And I always go back to the year Liverpool finished second under Benitez, the following season they got Tottenham away on the first day of the season. Mm. And I always remember putting on Facebook or something like that, the fixtures, you know, like, that's an absolute shocker of an opening game. And a United fan replied to me and was just like, What's the problem? You want to win the title? It's Tottenham away. You know, like, these are the games that you go and win. He's right, you know. But in my head, Tottenham away was always a tough game. But I look at Liverpool's fixtures now, and West Ham away and Aston Villa away. But then I watched Aston Villa in the FA Cup against Chelsea, and Chelsea went there and dismantled them. And I think Liverpool, if this Liverpool side remember just how good they actually are and how good they've performed, you know, take last season out of it, but in general over the past six, seven, eight seasons, they should go and win these games. And we'll come to this about United, but Manchester United aren't a good football team. You know, if Liverpool go and play Man United like they were any other team sitting in sixth or seventh place, they'd win comfortably. I think they've got to try and remember to play these games. Don't play them, you know, Villa away. Liverpool have a good record at Villa. Why go there and think anything otherwise than you go there to win? So, you know, hopefully Klopp drills that into them. Few comments I want to get to before we move on. I want to talk about Nunes. First of all, someone said Salah top corner, cop end against Chelsea for a strike.
Yeah, that was like a toe poke. Yeah, the old school toe.
Yeah, very strange strike, but a really, really good one.
Doesn't do that enough these days.
Yeah,
so he's tried a couple in recent weeks, but
he scored from 30 yards these days.
Like, the first couple of seasons, there was loads, weren't there? Like Roma. That was one where he just bent it, and that wasn't a clean
I think
strike.
He's changed as a player, though, hasn't he? Salah, he's changed his game a bit. You know, he's a bit more. They're not the same players, but if you humour me, remember when Owen went from being sort of like last shoulder pace to like a bit of a fox in the box?
Oh, yeah.
I think Salah has had to. You don't necessarily think of him as a player who beats players anymore. He sort of gets in the right places, doesn't he? And
he's strong, isn't he?
He's clinical. Someone said take the emotion out of the game on Sunday. No chaos. That's probably a good point. And then another one said that it's good that we have midfielders that bail us out. That makes the team more balanced. And I certainly think that's true about the three midfielders Liverpool have got now. Okay, take Endo out of it. He's not one, although he has scored a crucial goal this season. But Szoboszlai and McAllister,
yeah, I think
they offer more than Henderson.
They've got about 13 goals between them, haven't they, in all competitions?
Both got 13 goal contributions. I think it's 7 and 6 for one, 6 and 7 for the other.
Yeah, and then you think about Henderson and Wijnaldum, I thought when Liverpool were in their prime with those two, were great. But they were very much to service the fullbacks and the forwards, weren't they? You know, obviously Wijnaldum scores in the famous Barcelona game, but otherwise,
that was anger, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was he sort of came on, and Liverpool were just throwing players forward, weren't they?
He scored that big goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
Got the winner against City, and he scored in the semi final at Roma, didn't he? But
he scored at Tottenham once in the header. Big goal.
But generally, it's not something. It's not been a requirement of Liverpool's midfield as a few years.
Klopp said it, didn't he, at the start of the season when he was talking about the midfield. Like, one of the criticisms you can have of our team over the years is the midfield don't score enough goals. You can't say that now.
Yeah.
And that was when Szoboszlai had scored a couple early on. Yeah. But in hindsight, that's aged really, really well.
Yeah, certainly. Let's talk Darwin Nunes. Scores Klopp's favourite goal. But
what a finish. But you don't save those.
Yeah, you literally don't, do you? I mean, it was. Do you know what? They're the sort of goals that you need the luck, don't you? You need, and they also come from probably Darwin Nunes' complete willingness to constantly work for everything. The guy doesn't know, he doesn't know what a lost cause is, does he? You see him chasing all the time. And Theo, I'll come to you because you mentioned before, and I know you're going to write a piece about this today, but involved in 30 goal contributions this season.
Yep.
Take it away.
Yeah, so, what, 18 goals, 12 assists. Only three players have done it under Klopp before Nunes, and you can guess who those three are quite easily. Mohamed Salah.
Mane Firmino.
Salah has done it every single year, which I'm sure won't surprise anyone at all. But Mane and Firmino only did it once each, and you look at when they did it, it's their best seasons for the club. Mm-hmm. Firmino in 17-18, Mane in 19-20. And while there wasn't much of a decline from them afterwards, that is still the year you think them at their peak of the powers. Nunes as well, 23, 24? Whatever he does this year, he's going to do more next year, and then the year after. You'd like to think
He feels like he's on upward curve. Nunes. Yeah. I don't think we're seeing the finished article at all.
Like, he's still raw. He'll still miss the odd chance, but he's just got the attitude. He keeps the head up at all the times, and nothing's a lost cause for him. He just chases absolutely everything. He's been threatening one of those goals for a while because he's always on the keeper's toes. He's like deceptively quick.
Yeah,
but he's just a nuisance. He's so entertaining to watch. He makes football fun. Fans were loving his little appearance in that advert, weren't they, in midweek?
Yeah.
Robertson's comment, I don't know, I have a clue what you just said, but I love that is Darwin Nunes, isn't it? Yeah. You just love absolutely everything he does.
Yeah.
And it won't be his prettiest finish. We can do for cleanest finishers, actually. He's had a couple this year, hasn't he? Sparta Prague, Bournemouth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just love watching him play.
Yeah, love watching him play. There was a moment, Gorsi, in the first half when I think Salah rolled the ball through on the right channel.
Yeah.
And he just had no right to get to it.
Yeah.
And he pulled it back and they managed to clear it, Sheffield United. But again, I think it underlined just... I mean, I always think we call him a chaos causer and all this, but I actually think that doesn't do justice. To what he actually does, which is just... He creates more than chaos. He creates proper opportunities for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you can say about him is... If it was a subconscious thing for some players last night, thinking, oh, it's bottom of the league, these have been settable, we'll be all right here tonight. He wouldn't have thought that. I doubt he's even looked at the table and seen where they are. He's just thought, right, these are who I'm up against. I'm going to chase them.
Is he drawing horses?
Yeah. I'm going to chase after them like it's Ruben Diaz and, you know, whoever. And gets his reward. He didn't really have a chance last night, did he? You know, normally he's full of...
A couple of headers.
Full of, yeah, a couple of glancing headers in each half, but... You know, no real shot at goal. One just after he scores a goal with, like, he kind of shifts it from three or four and gets a little toe poke away. But no major chances, but still comes away with a goal. And like you say, it's his 18th of the season. You know, he quietly gets over 20 and suddenly you're looking at it thinking that's a remarkable return, you know, because that's generally what you're looking at for your striker, isn't it? 20 plus.
To get the 12 assists as well. Like, we all saw the comments from Roy Keane about Haaland at the weekend. Nunes, you can't say that about him. He's a bit raw. It's not the complete article, but he's still so effective in both sides of the game.
Yeah, he's a completely different player, isn't he? But I think he suits what Liverpool are trying to do. And he just injects... I mean, you can say this about all the recent signings, but he injects just sort of a positivity about Liverpool that it creates chances, it creates opportunities. Again, his personality suits this team. The never say die attitude is exactly what Klopp's always wanted from his players. He never gives up on things. He never gives up on lost causes. So, you know, I'm glad he scored a bit of a lucky one, if you want to call it that, last night. Because
last season,
he deserves
that would have went into the Anfield Road, wouldn't it?
I mean, how many times as well have we seen him this season and last season hit like a half volley that clips the post or goes just wide or the keeper makes a save? You know,
he's the Chelsea game
lucky
this season where he was hit the woodwork four times at a penalty, hit the woodwork. He's due a bit of luck, and it's just a bit strange that it's come at a time when he's actually in form. He's not in need of a goal. He was doing really well in recent weeks, but there's so many times where a cross has come in, he's done everything right, and the keeper still got a save. So it's nice to see the other side of it where he does get that lucky goal.
Yeah, I think when we picked our teams before the game, I wanted them to rest Nunes with the weekend in mind, and having watched, he just watched the first 20 minutes to see the enthusiasm that he put into the game. I realised why he didn't, because like you said, of all the players to count on that he wouldn't go and play Sheffield United bottom of the league and we'll canter through this, he's the opposite, isn't he? I actually think, in hindsight, and we'll come to this now, bringing Salah off, leaving him on, it all made sense, didn't it?
It did. I mean, it does with hindsight. I was scratching my head, I must admit. It was obviously a pre-planned thing, wasn't it? But just the timing of it, where Sheffield United get themselves back into it on the hour mark, and then Salah comes off. The very next kind of phase of play is Salah trotting off.
Someone did ask, by the way, whether that was just a pre-planned thing.
Yeah, you can always tell. Would have been bang on 60, it's pre-planned.
Yeah, and Klopp said there was a clean bill of health after the game last night, which is good. And then Endo should be back as well for United. So, I mean, they're still waiting for some big players to come back, but things are looking up, aren't they, on the injury front?
Yeah, it was positive on Wednesday when he said about Jota and Trent being back in team training as of next week, and then Alisson. If you asked him, he wouldn't be too far away from that either. So they're the three that Liverpool still need back, aren't they? Thiago, we're not sure what's happening with him. We know Matip's season's over.
Yeah.
And Bendo and Bichetta, it'd be nice to see both of them, but Liverpool don't have to rely on either of those. So it is Alisson, Trent and Jota who Liverpool could do back with. And then it gets really exciting because then it's pretty much as strong as you're going to get for the rest of the season.
My only concern with the injuries is they get back, but then they're going to have to ease them in because they're not getting the time on the training field. Like we saw that with Jones. He couldn't play against Brighton because he'd only been back a day. Because they're playing every 3 days, you're not getting that time. And that's what held Curtis Jones back last year, actually, because they were in the European games. They just couldn't get that time with him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until they were out of Europe that we saw the best of Curtis Jones.
Yeah,
and I know Jota, when he came back after the City injury, he was electric, wasn't he, over the festive period. But we saw with Trent the other side of it, where he just didn't look right. Yeah. Obviously, he had a setback.
Yeah, it was felt like he was carrying that injury for a few weeks and then finally succumbed to it.
He was very keen to get himself back. Trent, perhaps maybe too keen for his own good. So hopefully this time they're giving him some time. Just want to catch up with a couple more comments. John Kay's finally caught the pod live from the US. Hi, John. If you are watching live, give us a like and drop comments in.
What time is it in the US? What, 5-6 hours behind?
Not sure.
It
depends whereabouts in the US. It's a big place, Theo. And then someone else has asked whether we're going to do a podcast live from Dublin if Liverpool get there. Trust me, it's Paul that's asked.
That is
the dream. would absolutely love it. If you know a place, let us know, because
we might need you to put us up for the night as well.
Any excuse to me to tell my boss to pay for us all to go over there, and me especially, because these three will probably go. Definitely want to do that. Substitutions last night, I mean, Carragher tweeted in the after the game that Liverpool, and he said this a few times this season, Liverpool have used their substitutions really, really well this year, and Klopp's used that 5 substitution rule better than anyone. I mean, they were all good. Gakpo obviously gets his goal, but Robertson, I felt like the game was crying out. Joe Gomez has been great this season, but he was crying out for a bit of balance on the left, and Robertson didn't half add that, did he?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
100%, not a criticism of Joe Gomez. He's obviously instructed to play the left-back role a little bit different, where he's coming into midfield and trying to get on the ball. And he's not naturally a left-footed player, is he? And he's not naturally a full-back, certainly a left full-back. So, you can make a case for Gomez being Liverpool's player of the season. I think he's been exceptional, but doesn't give you what Robertson naturally does, spreading the... getting wide, spreading the play, and that cross you put in for Gakpo was textbook, wasn't it? Kind of stuff he's done dozens of times since he moved to the club. Good to see him back, really, because he's had an up-and-down season, hasn't he, with that injury in October. He had 4 months out, still waiting for him to get back to top speed. Then he has the ankle injury for Scotland. So, last night was a massive step in the right direction for him for, was it 25 minutes or something like that? And I'd like to see him in the team on Sunday as a result.
It's incredible to think, isn't it, Theo, that Robertson and Trent, during Klopp's best seasons, 2020 and 2019, were like Liverpool's best two weapons, weren't they? They provided all the goals. We've barely seen them this season, really, if you think about it. They've both had big injuries. Liverpool have hardly relied on them at all. And having them back... it's felt like a bonus. And last night he came on and I thought, just the sheer energy put into it. Sheffield United had sort of got themselves back into the game. And then I think Chris Wilder said as much, didn't he, after the game, that they just couldn't take another injection of Liverpool energy. And Robertson sort of led the charge with that. By the way, it's 6:20 in the USA. So
it's not too bad.
Thanks for getting up early for us, John. There's not many people I get up at 6 for nowadays. I forgot what I was saying. The fullbacks. I mean, kind of, you forget how big a weapon they are for Liverpool.
Yeah, like Klopp said a few times in games that they've needed to play it a bit wider. Like when they're struggling to break down that low block, that's the time where you put Gomez on the right-hand side, or you just unleash Bradley, you let Robertson get forward, you have Trent not inverting as much. And there was a period when Liverpool became too predictable. We saw that after the 2022 Champions League final. And you break it down to how Liverpool have adapted under Klopp's whole reign. When he first comes in, it's all about Coutinho. He's the magician. He's the one who creates absolutely everything. He goes, you miss out on Nabil Fekir. You go, actually, we don't need that number 10. We'll go with the fullbacks. And then their assists over that period are just insane. Then you get to last year when it wasn't happening. And at times in 21-22, but there wasn't anything stepping up to replace them.
Yeah.
This year, the midfielder getting goals, the midfielder getting assists, and you've got five forwards who are all in double figures for goals and they're making it count. But every so often, when you want to tweak the game, you can just go back to a natural fullback. Like we've seen Bradley get a few assists doing that runs down the right-hand side, like the old-school Klopp fullback. Robertson's obviously got in his locker, and it does tire teams out. Like if you're expecting the fullback to invert and be really congested in midfield, but then suddenly they're doing that overlapping run and putting crosses in, Liverpool have made themselves unpredictable again. Yeah. You know what they're going to do, but you don't know when they're going to do it, and they can just vary it up like that. It's part of the reason why they've been so successful this year. And when you put Trent back into it in a couple of weeks' time, well, is he playing right back? Is he playing in midfield? How is he picking those passes out? Is it crosses for Nunes or through balls for Salah? It's just going to be really exciting to watch once they're up to top speed, and it really sets the scene for a good running, hopefully.
Yeah, I feel like in 2019, 2020, when Liverpool were just at the peak, they had those fullbacks and they had the front three, and you sort of knew the way they were going to play, but there was hardly any way to stop it. They were almost perfect at one style, whereas now it feels like the midfielders can score, the fullbacks can, you can come inside or they can go outside. The forwards, I mean, whatever combination they put out, they seem to be able to put out a combination that can cause havoc, and they seem to have character in spades, don't they? And we've seen as well they can operate even without the likes of Salah. He missed all of January and beyond. So I think there's a lot to admire. Couple more comments coming in. A lot of people asking about Salah. And the way he reacted to a substitution. I mean, it's just Salah, isn't it? He doesn't want to be brought off.
Didn't actually notice. Was he unhappy? Was he
just frustrated?
Pulled a bit of a face, but I wouldn't read anything into it. I think Salah would play every minute of every game.
So some people try to make a story of players getting subbed out, don't you? Like, they're always going to be unhappy.
Yeah.
Brought off, especially when you need a goal and you're the top goal scorer.
Yeah. Against the strugglers, like he'll be eyeing up the Golden Boot and the Playmaker Award, because despite the fact that he's missed 2-3 months, he's still right up there with Haaland, and I think he's only one behind for the Playmaker Award, which shows how good he was first half of the season. But you think, how far ahead would he be if it hadn't been for AFCON, if it hadn't been for the injury? Because he's only started a couple of games at Anfield in the league since New Year's Day, which is incredible. Mental now we're in April.
Another question from John, our friend in the US, who was up early. He asked, do you think the injuries have helped just giving them fresher legs headed towards the season end? Because 2 years ago, we lost our juice by playing on all fronts. And they possibly, I mean, the fact that they've got through this period with so many injuries so well, I think is admirable. And they possibly could help. We don't know what state those players will come back in, but if you can throw Jota back in, it's not going to hurt you, is it?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned then, didn't you, about the kind of different styles that they've developed this season. And I think a lot of that's been down to necessity more than anything, with having so many key players out. You know, with having Trent not there, you're switching it, so Gomez is going into midfield, and it's Liverpool have had that forced upon them, really. But I mean, 2 years ago, Liverpool sort of did run out of energy, didn't he, at just the wrong time. I don't necessarily agree with that in terms of it being a Premier League thing, because Liverpool still managed to pretty much win every game, except for that draw against Tottenham. But in the Champions League, you know, it just felt like it was one game too many, didn't it? Particularly when you had like Thiago being an injury down the warm up, and there was uncertainty around that. But this year, I mean, don't get me wrong, I would have preferred Liverpool to have had Alisson and Jota and Trent for the past 2 months, but they could be coming back at an important time with huge games to come. Obviously, not going to be there for Sunday, but from next week onwards, you think, see what happens with that Atalanta team. Team news, and then is it Crystal Palace on the Sunday? Yeah. That could be one for Trent and possibly Jota, and we'll see. But I mean, those three in particular are hugely important players, aren't they? You know, certainly two out of the three are starters nailed on. I probably have Jota in there as well. So all three are, for me, are first team starters who Liverpool haven't had for 2 months. So yeah. Important to get them back.
I think 2 years ago, Liverpool still had a very set, strongest starting 11. Like what the team that started in Paris, you knew that was going to be the 11.
Yeah.
Whereas you can't accuse them of that now. There is so much competition here across the board.
Yeah.
Who's left back, who's right back, who's in midfield, who's up front. You're almost getting a debate on the goalkeeper now as well.
Mm.
So that strength and depth has definitely grown over the last 2 years. Whereas 2 years ago, Fabinho, Van Dijk and Salah played an awful lot of football. They played most weeks and they were the ones who got injured just at the business end, weren't they? Like Fabinho came off against Villa,
Salah and Van Dijk
in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
And then Thiago in the warm-up, as you said. So to have those knocks, they rushed him back for the Champions League final, as you would. Whereas now, if you... Oh, Trent's not 100%. Got Bradley. Konate's got a knock. Got Kwanzaa. Endo, maybe not there. McAllister goes deeper. You've got Curtis Jones. And speaking of Jones, I thought he was brilliant last night. He played for longer than I thought he would.
Yeah.
But that's a credit to him as well, that if all the players come back and have that sort of impact, Liverpool's squad is in its strongest position of the season.
Yeah, he brought one ball down in the area, didn't he? In the area, which just really smooth movement. And just a reminder of, I think he brings something to that midfield that the others don't, in the sense that he can shield the ball well. He protects it well, doesn't he?
That's something Liverpool didn't have against Brighton. For the last 15 minutes, it was a bit of a basketball game, wasn't it? But a bit of calm and clarity to the situation at the right time, I think.
Quick word then on United, looking ahead to the weekend.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I read last night that they've conceded over 500 shots this season.
I was going to look into that. That's incredible.
Just nuts, isn't it? 17.5 a game, which is more than any other team in the league. So more than Sheffield United, more than any other relegation-threatened team. I mean, this is where, obviously, they've got their dangers. And obviously, going to Old Trafford, we saw 3 weeks ago that holds danger in itself. And I always am saying to a United fan who works in our office, I won't reveal his name, on the train. On the train this morning. They remind me of Liverpool during the 90s and early noughties, when even when Liverpool were rubbish, you could turn them over at Anfield. You knew that they might just turn up for this one. So there's always that element of danger, but there were those other games that United would come to Anfield and just play like the very good team that they were. And I think, again, the pressure is on Liverpool to just go there and play like we know they can play, because Liverpool have scored more goals than any team in top five leagues in Europe this season. They can go there and win this comfortably, can't they?
I mean, they can. Whether they will or not remains to be seen, obviously. But I think you look through any season, any title-winning season, and there are statement wins, statement performances, big results. And I think Liverpool are still waiting on theirs this season. You know, when Liverpool won the league in 2020, that game against Man City at home is obviously the one that people look to. But also Leicester on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
You know, it's strange to say now, is that a Championship side, but Leicester was second at the time, weren't they? And there were question marks being asked about Liverpool's ability to go there, and he went there and blitzed them 4-0 and then never really looked back. I'm sure if you went through City's title-winning seasons, that there are big results dotted about the place.
But look, they dismantled Liverpool last year at the Etihad, didn't they? And I remember that time thinking, goodness, we were miles behind where they are.
So this is a chance for Liverpool to finally make their statement, maybe a bit belatedly in April, but it's just there for them, isn't it, to go. And I still think they will. That game on St. Patrick's Day is still relatively recent enough for them to be smarting when they go to Old Trafford. They'll tell you that they're not, and Virgil van Dijk said that last night, but... Yeah, I still think it might just linger there, and that's not no bad thing, to be honest.
Theo, I feel like we've talked about tricky games: West Ham away, Aston Villa away, obviously Goodison Park, Liverpool have got to go to. But I feel like this is a real opportunity for Liverpool to go. This is on paper our toughest game in the last eight. We go there and win, and we can win this title.
yeah, it's a chance to really boost morale, set the record straight after a couple of weeks ago and send that message to the rivals. You know how United are going to play. They're going to be defensive. They're going to be as deep as they can. They're going to frustrate you and they're going to hit you on the counter. They've got pace and they've got good players who can carry the ball forward. And that's really what cost the tie at Liverpool in the FA Cup. But like you had Garnacho, Anthony when he came on. But you've got that knowledge of it now. It's raw. It's in your memory. So surely that inspires you. You've got to... I know we've just been saying earlier, you've got to play the match rather than the occasion. But on this case, it could work in their favour as well. Like Liverpool do owe Manchester United one. They should have absolutely blitzed them at the 0-0 at Anfield and just frustrated in front of goal. It was a similar story when they retired a few weeks ago. But now it's like, we'll show how good we are. If we don't win the league, it's not because of Manchester United. And that's how we've got to approach it. I can't really decide if last night means United are going to be more of a threat or not.
No, no, it was hilarious, but
like the last couple of games, haven't they? They've been leading in stoppage time, late in stoppage time, and they've only got 1 point for it, which is kind of ironic considering that's what they did to Liverpool in the FA Cup.
They got battered by Brentford. You know, they were lucky to lead that game. So, you know, you might think that Brentford were lucky to score an equaliser, but they certainly weren't. They should have been well ahead.
There's so many games that they get carried through just by being Manchester United as opposed to players performing like players of Manchester United. And to an extent, that's what got them through in the FA Cup against Liverpool. Obviously, Liverpool took their eye off the ball and got a bit complacent in the second half. And I think they just felt like the second goal was going to come when it was all being played in United's half. I don't think they'll make the same mistake again Sunday.
They could go more gung-ho with it being a cup game as well. Like the fact that it has to be won on the day, you can make those gambles. It's not going to be as costly, whereas they can't really do that to the same extent of a league game.
Yeah, let's pick our teams. Obviously, Kelleher in goal.
It's not going to be too different from the cup game, to be honest.
I'm going to make some changes in defence, though, from Sheffield United.
Oh, from the Sheffield United, yeah. I'd have... Gomez at right back because Bradley, he struggled at Old Trafford a couple of weeks ago.
True,
Robertson comes in at left back and the centre backs are the same.
Is there a shout to play Quansah?
Yeah, I was just about to say, I mean, I don't think he will, but Konate looked out of sorts last night. He obviously hasn't played for the last 4.5 games and looked like a player who doesn't have the fabled rhythm and momentum.
Did take a massive whack in the second half as well. Klopp said everyone's fine.
But despite all that, I still think I'd keep faith in them, and I agree with you as well about Gomez at right back. I think we've seen, was it the cup game when Gomez moved to left back and Bradley come on at right back, and that's when United started to get a few chances down that side. So
that's when Garnacho just tore him apart.
So United might have scored their winner had it been Gomez instead of Bradley getting left 1v2 at the back. I'll stick with Gomez for this one, and Robertson comes back in.
Yeah, I agree. That would be my back four. I think there is a shout to play Quansah. He's played very well, and I think Doyle pointed out in the last pod he's played all the big games this season. But I think against United, the recovery pace of Konate up against, say, Rashford, who didn't start last night, did he? Could be big for Liverpool, especially if they're trying to play the game in United's half. So
he's generally good in big games as well. Konate, always excellent against Arsenal.
My heart was in my mouth when he took that knock last night.
Stretch again, ready as
back.
Well.
I thought it's his knee go backwards in the way it did. I was like, oh God,
he's a unit, that Ben Osborne, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean they've got a few units, haven't they? But and then this is just tying into a few comments. Midfield, Sanjay earlier on saying that we missed Endo. Scott Barkley in the comments saying we need Endo back. He goes straight back into my midfield if he's fit, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool missed him last night. You know,
do you not think?
Sheffield United barely went over the halfway line, did he?
I think he gives Liverpool a platform. I think he gets Liverpool ticking better. But go on.
But he comes back in. He's one of the first names on the team sheet and has been for 3 or 4 months, hasn't he? So he comes in. McAllister, carry on your superb form. And Szoboszlai over Elliot.
Yeah, it still feels a bit harsh on Elliot, doesn't it? But I think looking at this game, it's not so much just the ability that we know Szoboszlai has, but it's the physical presence as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that trio. Like we seem to be saying it every week for Elliot. It's harsh. It's unlucky to be left out. Like, he was unlucky not to start yesterday. I can understand why he went for Gravenberch.
Yeah, I think it was more about getting Gravenberch some momentum,
getting some minutes against a team you expect to win, and he's a bit more different to Szoboszlai, isn't he? So they complement each other a bit better on paper than Elliott would with him. But yeah, just randomly going on Gravenberch. It was a typical Gravenberch performance, wasn't it? A few really good touches and then just really weak challenges subbed early.
I'm not sure what I think about Gravenberch. I mean, he needs plenty of time, I think, at Liverpool. And a worry for him is that Klopp's leaving at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, in my head, they were going to try and inject some maturity into his game and try and mould him into a proper midfielder. I think he's got the attributes, but I just think his game... intelligence is pretty...
He's lost his way a bit, hasn't he, since the autumn when he was looking like he was going to really kick on.
Well. Yeah. He's probably sixth choice for me now. Like, you've got the first choice three that was starting there. Jones is unlucky not to be in the first choice three, and that's only because of the injuries he's had. Yeah. And when he's fully firing, it's really hard to choose who you'd start there. It probably depends on the opposition, whether you can go... We can have McAllister as the sixth and go for a more offensive trio or not. And then Elliott's still that first one off the bench, isn't he?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, yeah. Now, there is a slight worry around Gravenberch, but he's very young. He's very young. And then you're front three. You keep him.
Yeah, I mean, Gakpo looked sharp last night. Took his goal really well, but I still think that the front three is still Liverpool's best chance.
Gakpo started the FA Cup game, or have I just made that up?
No, he came off the bench.
Did he come off the bench? Yeah.
Everyone got injured.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I mean, front three stays the same, doesn't it? Give us a prediction, Gorsty.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, isn't it? You know, we've spoken about how poor United are and whatever else. I never really backed Liverpool not to win. I go 2-1 Liverpool.
Yeah.
I'm going to be negative. I'll go 1-0.
I'm going to be positive. My glass of Carabao is always half full, and I think Liverpool are due. Liverpool, I keep saying it, and it, you know, might be tempting fate, but Liverpool are such a much a better football team than this United team, and they concede a lot of shots. Liverpool have a lot of shots. Liverpool have a lot of class at times. United got away with murder in December. They got away with it again 2-3 weeks ago. They can't keep getting away with it.
Yeah, I mean, you said that for.
Got a lot of injuries as well.
Apart from the 5-0, though, is Liverpool's record at Old Trafford recently not the best? It's quite bad, isn't it?
Well, they won the FA Cup. They got knocked out the FA Cup, but they won the league game that season behind closed doors, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was 5-0. Then they got beat. Was there a game in between those two games?
What was it? So they had the 1-1 draw when they won the league, lost 2-1 last year. Are we missing one, or is that
5-0? What?
They won 4-2 during the pandemic.
4-2.
Yeah. 5-0 and then 2-1, wasn't it? So, it's not great.
Yeah, it's not great. But as I say...
18-19. I remember that.
0-0, was it?
Must have been.
Is that when Milner starts at right back?
Yeah. I'm going to say 3-1 Liverpool. I think at some point something's got to give. And
I mean, like I'm saying, Liverpool need a statement, don't they? And this is the ideal chance.
Send the United fans home early. Make them walk out after 40 minutes when you're 4-0 up.
That would be very nice, Theo. Gorsy, where can we find you if we want to hear more of what you've got to say?
PT Gorst, that's Gorst.
Yeah. Theo, where can we find you?
Theo Squires Echo.
Easy peasy. At Joe Rimmer 88. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for getting involved in the comments on YouTube. Please give us a like if you're still watching. And check back again on Monday for another pod. If you're listening on Apple, please give us a star review. Check out our sponsors, NordVPN. There's a link in the podcast description and on the YouTube description. You get 4 months free with our special offer at nordvpn.com/bloodred.
On board with Nord.
Get on board with Nord, yeah. And thank you so much for them for their sponsorship. We'll be back on Monday to discuss the United game. Hopefully a big win for Liverpool and look ahead back to the Europa League because they play the first leg of their quarter final against Atalanta next week. So plenty going on. Thanks again. We'll see you soon. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.